This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Halfway through our first show of the work week, and man, these 2 hours before always fly by, and the 2 hours after this point also fly by because we're doing our best to get to absolutely everything. World Series Game 1 and 2 coming up in our next segment, because it's been maybe everything that you could ask for other than, say, a split so that we're closer to a 7-game series. But the emotional roller coaster ride, the numbers are off the charts for the World Series viewership so far. So I'll share those numbers with you. So we'll get to World Series games 1 and 2 and the news about Ohtani. Now, coming up on Monday, we've got game 3 in the Bronx. So games 3, 4, and 5 are set for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if necessary. I do hope they force this back to L.A., and we will have our special in-studio guest who's here to cover the World Series. Actually, I should say in-studio guests, as in plural. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, oh, you're in for a great surprise. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Man, what a Sunday with a Hail Mary for the young Commanders and Jaden Daniels to Noah Brown. He's one of the candidates for Monday MVP, and I dare say he should be making headlines on this Monday, even for people who don't know his name or the Commanders or don't follow football on a regular basis. This was really incredible, and maybe the easiest catch on a Hail Mary that you'll ever see. So check out that poll at Amy After Hours. You can also find it on Facebook. Once I get it up there, I swear I'm going to. There's just a lot happening behind the scenes here. Coming up this hour, we'll also get to Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones. Oh, heavens. Well, Aaron Jones used to be a teammate of Aaron Rodgers. I meant to say Aaron Rodgers. The Perfect Show was gone a long time ago, so I won't even say it. Aaron Rodgers is retreating into the darkness. Maybe joining Aaron Jones. No. It's not that bad for the Vikings. So, yes, the Patriots come up with a fairly stunning victory over the Jets. Bill Belichick is proud of Gerard Mayo and the young Patriots. Though New England does lose Drake May to a concussion in the second quarter, so Jacoby Brissett was back on the field. We'll talk about that game. We're also going to get to the Lions, who so far have the most points of any team in the NFL in week number 8. Man, what a celebration of Lions football in their game, regardless of opponent. I mean, this is pro football. They all get paid to play. So we'll get to those two games coming up, as well as a few others like maybe Falcons and Bucks, an NFC South clash. Do you believe yet, Falcons fans? That's a big question. But we want to start this hour in Cleveland on the shores of Lake Erie, where if you hadn't heard, the longtime voice of the Cleveland Browns, Jim Donovan, who had stepped away this season and had given up the microphone to Andrew Siciliano. He's the voice now that you hear on the Browns radio calls. Jim Donovan stepping away because he was dealing with cancer. And the news broke on Saturday that he had passed away. And he was on radio and TV for Browns games and for the nightly news. So he was also an anchor in Cleveland. And he was a family member to so many of those people who are diehard Cleveland sports fans. I'd obviously seen them through and spoken to fans through the lowest of lows, but also the highest of highs, and some incredible Cleveland sports moments like the Cavaliers coming back from a 3-1 deficit against the Warriors in 2016 to win the NBA championship. His voice, I can hear it in my head, and I'm sure that's the case for Browns fans, that he will permanently be part of the Browns fan experience and the dog pound. So we grabbed a couple of the Jim Donovan classic calls so that you can remember him when he was strong and when he was riding that wave with Browns fans.
From the 7, back to pass he goes, steps up, he gets hit in the slot, back at the 10-yard line. And it's Courtney Brown again.
A hat trick for Courtney Brown.
The Steelers with 4 seconds are trying to get the field goal team on. 2-1. They won't get the kickoff. And the Browns win it. The Browns have won it.
And on fourth down, Cunningham to throw. He fires and the ball got knocked down by Orpheus Roy. Down to the ground. And it's Brown's ball. Browns win. A long time waiting for this one.
Cleveland, this wins for you.
Green stutter step. He's through. First down, 40, 45, 50, 45, 40. Run, William, run.
Back by the goal line. He's got to come out with it. He's to the 5. He angles. He's up the sideline. He's still running. He's to the 20, 25, 30. He's to the 40. He's down the sideline and angles left. He's to the 35, 30, 25, 20. He's got blockers in front. 5. Touchdown. Joshua Cribbs turns disaster into a score.
Those calls, Jim Donovan, with his voice, and not just from the Browns on radio, but also a nightly part of the fan experience in Cleveland with his sports report. And we appreciate WKYC putting that montage together so that we could borrow it and use it here on After Hours. So the Browns, of course, as well as many others in football and in Cleveland, paying tribute to him on social and also wanting the game on Sunday to be an inspired performance by the Browns, even as much as the season has been a struggle. And boy, was it against Baltimore, a team that had won 5 consecutive games. So had dropped the first 2 games of the year, but had won 5 in a row, including a fairly convincing win over the Buccaneers last week on Monday Night Football. Ravens on the shores of Lake Erie. And this was a defensive slugfest early on. Remember, there's no more Deshaun Watson. Nick Chubb is still coming back. The O-line for the Browns has been tough, but yet that defense, it was playing, as I say, inspired. It was only 10-6 at the half, and this is only because there was a late Baltimore touchdown after Kyle Hamilton came racing around the blind side on Jameis Winston and was able to smack him, and he did fumble the ball. It was recovered at the Cleveland 25, and so Lamar Jackson, he makes quick work of that opportunity. Nelson Agholor has a couple of catches, and they're into the end zone for that lead at the break. But after halftime, Cleveland takes the lead multiple times. So this one kind of goes back and forth, back and forth. But I appreciate that Jameis Winston settled the Browns down into a rhythm and they were marching 70 yards.
Jameis under center, Foreman the back on first down. Jameis, quick play fake. Jameis to throw. Jameis lofting, end zone, up and in to the end zone. David Njoku! Touchdown pass, Jameis Winston, David Njoku.
The call there on the Browns Radio Network, again with Andrew Siciliano, who took over the job this year. So it's a pair of Jameis touchdown passes to Njoku and then Cedric Tillman. And that's sandwiched around a Baltimore TD drive where Mark Andrews is on the receiving end from Lamar. So you've got a lot more scoring early in the second half. Now here's where it starts to get really interesting, and it's par for the course for Baltimore and Cleveland. So the Ravens are down 23-17 and Baltimore flies. And it just kind of felt like that. It was rapid. It was quick. It was hard hitting. 91 yards with a bunch of chunk plays. They get down the field and then they turn to the workhorse in Ravens purple.
Direct snap to Lamar. He pitches it to Derrick Henry. Henry to the left. Bends off a tackler. Touchdown, King Henry. And the Ravens are an extra point away from regaining the lead.
Jerry Sandusky on Ravens radio. All right, so now we're 2.5 minutes out. Derrick Henry has put the Ravens in front, plus the extra point. Cleveland doesn't have a whole lot of time, but doesn't need a whole lot of time. 97 seconds later, along the way, Jameis Winston is locked in 6 completions, including the aggressive approach, because what else do the Browns have to lose?
104 to go, 2nd and 15.
I don't mind a run right here. An inside handoff to Nick Chubb.
Chubb stays in the backfield. Jameis to throw. Jameis has time. Jameis going deep. Has Tillman. End zone.
amazing, right? So with 97 seconds for this drive, they're able to get into the end zone in the final minute. It's the go-ahead score, and it's Cedric Tillman's second in the second half. And Baltimore really doesn't have enough time. Kind of a few attempts, but they fall woefully short, and the Browns are able to celebrate. And what a day for Jameis Winston. His first start in 2 years. He goes 27 of 41, 334 yards, and three touchdowns.
It was a blessing, man. I'm so, like I said, I'm so happy and grateful that God gave me this opportunity to lead this team, man. I've been starving for this opportunity, but the way the guys took me in, and again, the way that when you're able to have a meeting with your head coach and he's certain of what he wants to do, you that instills confidence in you, and then that confidence exuberates throughout the building.
I thought the protection was outstanding all day. I thought the guys really took the challenge of that, and I thought he got through his reads, and the guys got open. He made good decisions. Wasn't perfect. No, you know, he's not going to play perfect. I'm not going to coach perfect, but I thought he played well.
Ultimately, when they were in the locker room, Kevin Stefanski wanted to make sure that the Donovan family was remembered.
I told you guys I would love nothing more than to give this game ball
to the family.
To the family of Jim Donovan.
Hell yeah. Right.
Hell yeah.
So, Jim loved the Cleveland Browns. He loved you guys. Okay, we love him back. We will be there for his family. This one's for Jim. Yes, team on three. One, two, three.
Well, I mean, it's can be said it was a different impact for everyone. Not everyone was here for as long as myself or Joel or David. So for myself, I mean, as long as I've been around, he's been the voice of the Browns. He's been, you know, calling plays since, you know, my first sack to, you know, some of the very last ones. So it's definitely a hard loss, and you know, we all felt it, and you know, we appreciate everything that, you know, he's brought to, you know, being a Brown and being part of this organization, because, you know, there was no one like him.
That's the voice of Myles Garrett. And there is a photo, if you haven't seen it. Kevin Stefanski gave the game ball to Jim Donovan's wife and daughter. And there is, like I say, a photo out there where they're together. So they've lost their beloved husband and dad, but the Browns will not forget them. So that was a really sweet gesture, and I think you can look what the Browns did today in this game. And yes, you get up for a game against the Ravens, but clearly they had their best performance of the year to date. As for the Baltimore Ravens, they lose for the first time in 6 weeks, and yeah, I mean, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens go 3 of 4 in the red zone. Ultimately, the defense is not able to stand up in the end. But also, you look back on those missed opportunities.
Every loss is frustrating. Because we've been doing so good. You know, offensive side of the ball, defensive side of the ball. We just been putting points on the board, keeping teams out of the end zone. We just got to play better.
You always want to do enough to win the game. We weren't able to do that in this game. So we'll definitely break it all down. You know, we'll break every aspect of it down. When we sit there and watch the film, everybody will look at everything that they did, they can do better, and everything we did, and we'll try to continue to keep improving.
So this was a fun back and forth. Maybe not what you would expect initially between Ravens and Browns. And I saw this quote from Lamar that made me smile. He said, "You can look at the Browns' record and say that's a sorry team, but this is the NFL. Any week can be your day. We didn't make the plays. We didn't make the calls to win the game." And yeah, it's true, right? This is why the difference between winning and losing is so razor sharp in the NFL, and why last week when we talked to Ron Rivera, I asked him, how hard is it to win a game? And he gave me this long, extended answer. It's part of our podcast, if you want to go check it out, about how difficult it is because of the extensive preparation and the matchups and how nuanced every play is, both offense and defense, and the amount of pressure that's on each coaching staff and each team, which means they're all working toward the same goal, but doing it with such expertise that you're looking for an edge anywhere you can find it. And if you leave the door open with turnovers, with penalties, your lack of discipline, whatever it is, well, you're going to end up in dire straits, and that can be the difference between winning and losing. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Real quick, before we get to our break, I want to sneak in the Titans and the Lions, because by far, this was the highest scoring team of the day. And it was actually, I thought, really interesting to see the Lions against the Titans because you got a first half in which the Lions dominated on the ground, but then you get a second half in which they're able to work the air attack, the aerial attack, if you will. So yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs has a 70-yard rushing touchdown in the first half, and they're able to rack up a ton of yards on the ground. Now, keeping in mind, they were well ahead. They had this game in hand, and yet they had so few passing yards in the first half. If all you saw was the number of passing yards, or maybe you're following the time of possession, you might think, without knowing the score, that the Titans were in control. But the Lions were just taking advantage, and they were using the run game, right? So they take advantage of the fact that Mason Rudolph throws a couple of interceptions. They use those to turn him into points. And they get just rolling in that second quarter. And over the course of second into third quarter, they scored 5 touchdowns in 6 possessions. So it's pretty incredible to see what they were able to do once they found that rhythm. Now, the reason we have Khalif Raymond in our Monday MVP poll is because he dominated the second half of this game.
Let's see what they do here.
They've had a couple blocked already this season, 2 Tennessee punts.
Snap it deep. Punts away. Khalif Raymond back deep. Had a 64-yard punt return of the first half. Takes it at the 10. Makes the first man miss. Second man miss. Gets to the 20. 25-yard line. There's the 30. 35. Cuts left at the 40. There goes Leaf. Left sideline. To the 40. To the 30. He's gone, baby. He's gone. 10-5. End zone. Touchdown, Khalif Raymond. What a thing of beauty. Leaf takes it back to the house, and 65,000 strong are standing at Ford Field. Lions now first and goal from the 8. Goff up under center, turns, fakes the give to Jahmyr.
Got
now
him.
Throws, Khalif, 10-5, walk it in, young man. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Gave him a look like Khalif was going to come for the end around, and he just doubled back to the right side. Goff threw it to him, and he was wide open.
Khalif Raymond ends up with 190 return yards, but he has a pair of touchdowns, one through the air from Jared Goff, but also the 90-yard punt return that goes into the end zone. And it was eerily similar to the first one in which he nearly got to the house, as you hear with Dan Miller on Lions Radio. So, yeah, what a contribution from Raymond on this Sunday.
Just to be playing such a team game is so fun. Special teams, defense, takeaways, offense, pushing it in. It's just really fun to be part of a football team like that. So really cool.
We did come out to fight, and that's what we expected. I felt that we were going to be ready. We were going to be ready. And it's like I told them, that's what champions do.
Well, don't look now, but it's the 5th straight win for the Lions, and they're sporting their best record. This is a franchise record best through 7 games, going all the way back to 1956. Not since the mid-50s had the Lions had this good of a start through their first 7 games, right now sitting at 6-1, even though they gave up 416 yards of offense to the Titans. But yeah, the Titans turned the ball over 4 times, and really that's the big stat that you need to know. The Lions were efficient, and they were methodical, and they dismantled Tennessee. 52 points, though, of course, you get the punt return TD, so not all on offense. But looking at our standings, I mean, this is incredible what the Lions have done. We knew they were a team to beat coming out of their run to the NFC Championship last year. They're at 6-1. Packers are 6-2, even though they lost Jordan Love to a groin injury on Sunday. Malik Willis comes in and crushes it. The Vikings have dropped back-to-back games, but they're still 5-2. And the Bears, despite losing on the Hail Mary, are also above 500. So the NFC North is chock full. But I'll go back to our Ron Rivera conversation. What he said is, well, don't get too high on the NFC North until they start playing each other. Then you really see the truth of this division come out. But still, the Lions are 6-1, and they've got the most wins in the NFC, along with the Washington Commanders. So those are your top two teams right now in the NFC, Packers being a half game back. At A-Law Radio is where you can find me online. I do not take tweets back. No backsies, even if I was a little bit off, a little bit quick on the draw. You can check it out and also vote for Monday MVP. I'll get that post up on our Facebook page momentarily. Coming up, World Series, two games deep, Dodgers ahead. But what is Ohtani's status? It's After Hours on the Infinity Sports Network.
And look who's coming up. Sacks waiting on deck. But the game right now is at the plate. High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
Unbelievable! A home run for Gibson. And the Tigers have won the game 5-4. I don't believe what I just saw.
In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Man, what a walk down memory lane this weekend for those of us who were old enough to see the moment that Kirk Gibson hit a walk-off home run to win game one of the World Series in 1988. 36 years later, Dodgers in a similar position, though completely different scenario and a different guy, but a new hero. And yeah, the montages, the video montages that you've probably seen online if you were watching over the weekend, social media did some great montages putting together the Kirk Gibson home run with Friday night's walk-off for the Dodgers and even interspersing the calls. Now, for me, as much as I love Vin Scully, he is one of my favorite voices.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Of all time, regardless of sport or genre, he was incredible. So I thought two things in that moment. Number one, I wish that Vin Scully could have seen it because you can imagine the stories that he would tell or how he might call it. So I'm sad that he's gone and didn't see it. But I wasn't listening to Vin Scully call it back in 1988. I can remember vividly watching it. So I was young, but I can remember vividly watching it with my family and listening to Jack Buck make the TV call. And so I know the Vin Scully call by heart because I've heard it so many times. But what I remember about that moment is watching a hobbled Kirk Gibson take his bat up there. He didn't play the whole game. I remember that ball flying off his bat. I remember him with the fist pumps as he's between first and second base. And I remember Jack Buck. I don't believe what I just saw. I mean, I can hear that voice in my head. It's one of the most iconic calls in baseball play-by-play history, regardless of team or year or genre or athlete. Kirk Gibson walks it off in game one of the 1988 World Series, and I remember it as a kid, which is why Friday night was kind of a full circle moment. And wait a minute, I really don't believe what I just saw.
First pitch swinging, high fly ball, hit deep, back, and gone! Channeling his inner Kirk Gibson, a walk-off home run in game one of the World Series, a walk-off grand slam.
Now, it's the first time that's ever happened. There's never been a walk-off grand slam to win a World Series game in the history of this game that preserves its history, as though if it doesn't, something may be lost. So it guards its history voraciously, and this is the first time we've ever seen a walk-off grand slam to win a World Series game, which is awesome. Now, Freddie Freeman, you know, he's been hobbled. He's dealing with the high ankle. He had a triple. He actually legged out a triple early earlier in game one on Friday. But do you know how he got to the plate with the bases loaded? Oh, well, they intentionally walked Mookie Betts to get to him.
It felt like nothing. You know, I was just kind of floating. Those are the kind of things when you're 5 years old with your two older brothers and you're playing football in the backyard, and those are the scenarios you kind of dream about. Base loaded, two outs in a World Series game, and for it to actually happen and hit a home run and walk it off to give us a 1-0 lead, that's as good as it gets right there.
Freddie Freeman emotional afterwards, as you can imagine, because of just the flood of everything that hits you in that moment. Now, he hadn't hit a home run since August because he'd been on and off the field. And so incredible for so many reasons. But also, did you see him run over to his dad? So, of course, he's surrounded by his teammates at the plate. They've got the scrum. They're jumping up and down. He's hugging every single one of his teammates. I mean, just the incredible moment to watch. And of course, Dodger Stadium is loud, loud. Freddie Freeman eventually extricates himself from the scrum and he heads over to his dad, who is sitting just behind the net. So I don't think he was directly behind home plate, but he was right off the field behind the net. And Freeman and he kind of do the double high five between, you know, they've got the net between them, and they put their heads together. And yeah, he really got emotional talking about that.
My swing is because of him. My approach is because of him. I am who I am because of him. And, you know, it was kind of spur of the moment. I saw him hugging a lot of people back there. So all the batting practice, all the relentless hours we spent together on a baseball field, we still do it in the off season together. He still throws me batting practice.
Freddie Freeman, if you remember, chose Los Angeles as his free agent destination rather than staying in Atlanta, in part because of his father and his grandfather. But you remember the year he's been through where he had to step away from the team for multiple weeks because of they were dealing with a health issue with one of their kiddos. So it's been an up and down year for Freeman to come through with this kind of a moment. And then he has a home run in game number two as the Dodgers are trying to back Yamamoto. So they get a Freeman homer, a Teoscar Hernandez home run, a Tommy Edman homer. Remember, he was the trade deadline acquisition from the Cardinals, and he had the NLCS MVP under his belt for, I think it was the 11 RBI. Don't quote me if I'm wrong, but 11 RBI for the Dodgers in their championship series against the Mets. So yeah, they're protecting a 4-1 lead. Yamamoto is terrific in game number two. Now he has to work his way out of a couple of jams, but to face the lineup that is the Yankees and to recognize how it's full of landmines. You're talking about a performance from Yamamoto that is special considering that he also dealt with injuries for a good portion of this season. So right now, the Dodgers, they're piecing it together. They're getting the offense, of course, but Yamamoto, he goes into the seventh, allows just one run, and it was a home run. He allows the one run, a couple of walks, four strikeouts in there, and really the only hiccup is the Juan Soto solo shot in the third. So the Dodgers have the 4-1 lead, but once again, in the final frame of a World Series game, the Dodgers have to face a bases-loaded situation. So, of course, in Game 1, it was the Yankees who had the bases loaded with Dodgers and ended up with the Freeman Grand Slam. Well, what about in the ninth inning with the bases loaded and Yankees aboard?
Bessia fires his first pitch. Trevino hits a high fly ball. Left field, playable for Tommy Edman, who calls for it, and that's a win for LA! And that's a 2-0 World Series lead! Tommy Edman, about 15 feet in front of the warning track in left center field, settled underneath of a nervy final out in the ninth inning. As the Dodgers leave them loaded for New York and hang on to win by a final of 4-2.
The calls with Steven Nelson on Dodgers radio. So, yes, they take care of their business at home. Going back to the opener of the World Series, of course. Do you remember Producer Pete?
I heard it just an hour ago, and I'm forgetting.
Yeah, it was Steve Oral Hershiser first pitch. I can Google it quickly. Steve Yeager, right? So it was Oral Hershiser and Steve Yeager that were out there, and they were intending to throw the ceremonial first pitch together, but instead they laid the ball down on the dirt underneath his number 34 and did not throw out the first pitch. And I got to tell you, his family was there. His widow, I mean, he was only 63 years old, so the family's young. Widow, two sons and two daughters. And it reminded me of the Goudreau tribute to start the Blue Jackets home season, because the family is all there, but it's so new and it's so raw. And in the case of Fernando, he only passed away a few days ago. And as you can imagine, they're in tears and they're clinging to each other just to get through this. But what a special way to honor him. I mean, his presence was all over there at Dodger Stadium. And then they get the walk-off grand slam. Now, the one wrinkle for the Dodgers in these first couple days is that Shohei Ohtani slides into second base trying to steal. Don't ask me why, when you're up 4-1. And I think it was the eighth inning of game number two. But it certainly had a drastic emotional impact on not just the fans in the stands, because it went relatively quiet, but the guys in the dugout, if you saw their faces.
Not only the dugout, but the whole stadium went silent. You know how big Shohei is for this team, and hopefully he's okay, and the day off tomorrow will help him get back on the field Monday.
The scene, very concerning, obviously, when you get any one of your players that goes down, it's concerning. But after kind of the range of motion, the strength test, I felt much better about it.
And what we've heard since then, the Dodgers were first to get back to New York. They flew overnight. I know this because our friend Michael Duarte of NBC LA was telling me their travel plans. They flew overnight, so they took a red eye on Saturday night to get back and be here on Sunday to try to get some BP and get out to the field in the Bronx and just to rewrite themselves after jet lag. Yankees didn't fly back until Sunday during the daytime. So the Dodgers had the stadium to themselves on Sunday, and manager Dave Roberts told ESPN's Carl Ravrich via a text, quote, "He's playing tomorrow." So that news broke in the afternoon. Apparently, Ohtani still has to go through a workout, but they're confident that because of the minor dislocation that he'll be able to play. He's been able to recover relatively quickly. So that's a huge deal. Don't know about Aaron Judge. Can he recover quickly? Can he recover in time for the Yankees to make this a longer series? In the opener, he struck out three times and he's flailing. So he was 0-for-4. And then in game number two, he's chasing again. And he's a professional hitter. He's one of the best in the game, but he certainly does not look himself. And of course, people are wondering about the pressure of being in his first World Series.
It's all the same. You know, you just run out of games when it's here. You know, April, you got a long season ahead of you. So, you know, definitely got to step up. I got to do my job. You know, guys around me are doing their job, getting on base, you know, and I'm failing them, you know, backing them up. So, you know, we got to turn around game three.
That's the presumptive AL MVP on Yes Network. So far, though, fans not disappointed. The World Series is averaging just shy of 15 million viewers per game. There's only two of them, but these are the best viewership numbers since 2017. Do you guys remember who was in the World Series in 2017? That would be Dodgers and Astros in 17. So this is I'm not making this up. I didn't do the math. This is like legit the numbers that Fox is releasing. A 65% bounce over last year's game two. 65%. Now that was a poorly viewed game two. Remember, it was Diamondbacks and Rangers, and it was one of the worst ever on record. So yeah, it makes sense that this one between Dodgers and Yankees would have a drastic increase. But this was the most watched game two since Dodgers Red Sox going back to 2018. And yeah, they're averaging greater than 14.5 million viewers through the first couple games. So I'm excited for it to potentially be a longer series. The Yankees are going to have to buck up and find a way to get some offense against these Dodgers pitchers, but also to be able to keep their bats at bay. at A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. Glad to have you with us. Vote for Monday MVP. We'll get back to football coming up. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network, Sports Flash.
This report is sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. Let's begin with Sunday Night Football.
Third and goal, 2-yard line. Christian McCaffrey looking from the Niners sideline. Last year, the best red zone offense in football, 67%. This year, 45%. Brock in the gun. They have Conley out wide right, 3 or left. Brock looking right, going to throw wide open. George Kittle, touchdown! George Kittle!
Greg Papa on 49ers Radio. The Niners beat the Cowboys 30-24. Brock Purdy threw for 260 yards and a touchdown, along with a touchdown run. Elsewhere on the scoreboard, the Chiefs over the Raiders 27-20, Broncos 28, Panthers 14. Commanders beat the Bears 18-15. Jaden Daniels, a 52-yard Hail Mary touchdown pass to Noah Brown with no time remaining. It was the Bills over the Seahawks 31-10, Chargers 26, Saints 8. Eagles beat the Bengals 37-17. Falcons 31, Bucks 26. The Patriots beat the Jets 25-22. Cardinals over the Dolphins 28-27. Packers 30, Jaguars 27. The Texans over the Colts 23-20. Lions 52, Titans 14. The Browns over the Ravens 29-24. NBA scoreboard, the Clippers over the Warriors 112-104. Thunder 128, Hawks 104. Blazers 125, Pelicans 103. Nets beat the Bucks 115-102. The Sixers beat the Pacers in overtime 118-114. Tyrese Maxey pumped in 45 points. NHL scoreboard, the Avalanche over the Senators 5-4. Canadians beat the Flyers 4-3. Devils beat the Ducks 6-2. In overtime, it was the Oilers over the Red Wings 3-2. Now to NASCAR at Homestead. Tyler Reddick, your winner. Ryan Blaney came in second. Denny Hamlin finished third. In golf, Nico Echeverria won the Zozo Championship. He finished 20 under. I'm Peter Schwartz.
The Infinity Sports Network is on your smart speaker. All you have to say is, play Infinity Sports Network. That's it. Play Infinity Sports Network.
Bourne, two tight ends to the right. Cooper inside of Henry. Second and 10 snaps to May. Got back. Feels pressure. Runs straight ahead.
Yeah.
Still on his feet past the 30. Across the 35. Into a feet first line. He split a pair of defenders. Both hands on the football like a fullback. And then he runs it with a slide
took
to
a
the 38
there,
yard line.
He's up slow. Took a shot there at the end. Good job, kid. Crazy legs, May. Oh! He was initiating the slide. He took a shot to the head. Take a look at this.
They went down into the slide.
Slide. Right there.
And on the head at the end of the play after the 18-yard run. And that was Jalen Mills that came down on him, it appeared, after leaving his feet.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The calls on the Patriots radio network, the initial elation over Drake May and his ability to scramble, a great athlete, but also takes a tough hit actually from behind, a tackle from behind him. So that's the back of his helmet that takes the impact. And they end up pulling him from the game in the second quarter. And according to Gerard Mayo, they decided to play it safe, but he is in concussion protocol. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. This is a game in which the New England Patriots are hosting the Jets. And in the second half with Jacoby Brissett, as you can imagine, they go heavy Ramondre Stevenson. And so his first rushing touchdown starts the third for the Patriots, and they're able to take the lead. Now, in the fourth quarter, New York goes on a 10-play drive, right? So Aaron Rodgers trying to lead them, bring all the pieces together. Devontae Adams, he's involved. And they are driving and they're able to get in position. It's not been great offense for the Jets again, but found some rhythm in the fourth.
Braylon Allen now in the game to the left of Aaron Rodgers. Two tight ends. Jet sweep motion. Goes Adams right to left. Hand off Braylon Allen. Submarines at the goal line. He's in. Ah, it's a Jet touchdown. Braylon Allen, the rookie, muscles his way across the goal line. And the Jets have the lead back.
So they are able to get that ball into the end zone finally, and that had to be feel pretty good there in the fourth quarter. Bob Wischusen on the Jets radio network. But it is the Jets, and I'm not sure that anything positive these days should be considered a period at the end of the sentence. Instead, it seems like it just sets you up for further failure. And the Patriots, they were game. And remember, Gerard Mayo called his team soft last week, something that even Bill Belichick took exception to. So here are the Jets. They're up 22-17 with under 3 minutes to go. Patriots get the ball back and they put together a good drive, some chunk plays to move the ball quickly, and they set up their workhorse in the late stages.
It's 22-17 New York. Smith is in the backfield, lined up as a fullback. Stevenson, the tailback. Henry motions left and right. Brissett hands it to Ramondre. He runs it into the right side. Go. He plows his way into the end zone. And the lead. Touchdown, Patriots.
It's a big boy drive by Jacoby Brissett. You've got to give this guy credit. The throw to Booty to get him down there. And then to stick it on him again. Aaron Rodgers is in disbelief. The Jets have choked another game away.
Once again, the call on Patriots radio, they take over with 22 seconds to go. They get into the end zone. It's 25-22. And you hear the reference to the Booty catch. And Jacoby hauls off. And well, actually, it was the second time that he tried to go deep. And the first one was incomplete. So then they go back to him. And it turns into a 34-yarder that instantly puts them into the red zone. And then Ramondre Stevenson, he's been good. He's been really a bull-rushing guys. I love the way that even Jacoby was willing to do whatever it took with his legs to get them into position. So also on this drive, he scrambles. And he's not a running quarterback, but he scrambles for a first down when they're facing a third and nine. And yeah, at this point, having to come in cold, take over for Drake May, he'd already been benched. What a statement by Jacoby.
I think this is a testament to me believing in myself and not y'all. And I'm very aware of that. And you know, I was very fortunate that, to have this opportunity.
As for the Jets and their quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, pure disgust when they walk off the field, the time expires. They really didn't have a whole lot to do. And now the Jets are 2-6, same record as the Patriots. And Aaron's talking about darkness again.
Yeah, I've been in the darkness. You got to go in there, make peace with it. Offensively, our goal has just got to be score 30. Doesn't matter what the other two sides are doing. You know, we have trust in our defense and teams. But if we're not scoring 30, we're underachieving. This offense can do that every single week.
What does that mean? We have to go into the darkness and make peace with it. What the hell is he talking about? Ever. I have no idea. But good for the Patriots. This is, I think, a response to Gerard Mayo, which he can be proud of. He can be happy with. I mean, you can agree or disagree that he should call out his team and call him soft. But Jonathan Jones agreed, and then they come back and they show that they're not going to be labeled that way, and they've got a little something-something for their coach. And so I think 2-6 for them is terrific. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.